people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, if you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down where life I'm fighting and falling down key. If you don't love it, leave it. You run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
I can believe you. Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, you have to have not been near a radio or television for the past, 4 or 5 days and not know about the what's called the coronavirus. It's a very virulent form of flu. Corona, because the seen under an electronic microscope, it apparently looks like a crown of studs or whatever. Anyway, it's out of China, and an area, a city and surrounding area, Wuhan, with almost 30 million people have been quarantined. So, at least theoretically, no people in, no people out. To try to halt the spread. Now, there's a lot of buzz on the internet that there are far more people than the Red Chinese will admit to. They're a little more forthcoming than when we had this big epidemic called SARS that happened about 15 years ago. They tended to cover up and deny and so on. Now they seem to be admitting that there really is a problem, and they're trying to do something about it. It may be, though, that the problem is far greater than what we've been told. Oh, I'll be keeping on that, and I'll probably get back to you again tomorrow night, but I'll tell you something we do know, and it gets right to the heart of something that's a big issue for me, and should be, I'd like to think for all of us, not just because I think it's important, but it is important. And that is immigration and multiculturalism. Now, you might say, oh, wait, so what does coronavirus have to do with immigration and multiculturalism? Well, I'll tell you. multiculturalism propounds the rank nonsense that all cultures are equal. Let me just take a very radical example. You want to tell me all cultures are equal? Okay. Is the culture that built the Cathedral of Notre Dame, that built the network of roads, modern science and health and medicine that we have here, is that, in your opinion, equal to, let's say, the cannibal culture of New Guinea? I'd have to say, well, can you honestly say that? And I think if you are sane, you'd have to say no, that's true. It's not, they're not equal. Okay, and I'm not going to belabor it any further, but. And part of the what's going on in China is a result of their filthy, some of their filthy cultural practices. Practices that they have not gotten a hold of, have not gotten on top of, despite what happened with SARS. Now, SARS occurred because an illness that was endemic to one member of the animal kingdom, in this case, the rare civet cat. A civet cat is a cat that has a bad-smelling gland, almost like a skunk, but the civet's very much prized in perfume-making. But this had nothing to do with perfume-making. The Chinese have a penchant for fresh meat. When we say fresh, we mean killed almost on the spot and then eat, consumed, cooked, or whatever. And in order for the meat to be fresh, well, let's just say alive, these animals that are about to be killed are kept in cages in the market. And you buy the animal and you have it slaughter it yourself, or it's slaughtered for you, and you run home and eat it. Now, civet cats are relatively rare. The cats should not have been in the market anyway, but you see, the enforcement isn't very good, and that's another problem. So there were civet cats. Now, they're kept in metal or wire cages. They're sick. They're sick. They're maybe dying. They're defecating, urinating, or to be entirely blunt about it, so we all know what we're talking about. They're pissing and shitting through the cages on other animals, and so the virus gets out and perhaps gets into meat that isn't cooked and gets into the human system. Well, that's what happened with SARS. That is apparently what has happened. That's the origin of the coronavirus. Although in this case, it's not civet cats, it's snakes. Now, whatever you think of eating snakes, I sort of have some reservations about that. They, of course, they have to be live snakes. Because meat has to be fresh. Anyway, here's a compilation of two articles. One is from a report in New Zealand, based on the South China Morning Post, and the other is an article by an extremely well-informed Canadian named Margulis, and he's been around a good many years. And Eric Margulis is an extremely informed writer on politics. He's an odd duck. He's, I think, partly Jewish, partly Albanian. Has business activities in many parts of the world, and is usually very, very sensible. Anyway, the article from New Zealand says, "Food market at center of deadly coronavirus outbreak admits selling live koalas, snakes, rats, and fur and wolves for human consumption." I know this is the year of the rat we're going into, although the rat in China is actually supposedly a symbol of good luck. But they eat rats. Koalas, the little bears, snakes, rats, and wolves. Wolves. Health Minister David Clark says they are, quote, on the alert but not alarmed over the deadly coronavirus. And he's the health minister in New Zealand. This is from the New Zealand Herald. The Chinese food market at the center of the deadly SARS-like virus outbreak that has claimed they sold live koalas, snakes, rats, and wolf puppies to locals to eat. Oh, how charming. The Hunan seafood market in Wuhan, and that's the city that's at the epicenter of this outbreak, is under investigation with officials believing that the coronavirus originated from a wild animal that was sold at the venue. So far, the highly contagious virus has killed 17 people and infected hundreds around Asia. According to the South China Morning Post, the market's advertising board has had live foxes, crocodiles, wolf puppies, salamanders, snakes, rats, peacocks, porcupines, and koalas for sale. You still think our cultures are equal? I have a picture here of dogs. I guess to be kind, they're probably, they are dogs, not just puppies, hanging by hooks, and they're ready to be purchased. This is the article by Eric Margolis. Is another Black Death on the way? Plagues from the East are nothing new. The Black Death and other epidemics arrived in Europe from China during the 1300s, killing a large percentage of the population. Much of this pestilence came from rats that stowed away on merchant ships coming from the East. You see, China has been the source of a great many of the most virulent diseases that have spread out throughout the world, but certainly very notably the Black Death, which in some areas destroyed 2/3 of the population. At the end of World War I, another pandemic, wrongly called the Spanish Flu, killed an estimated 18 to 50 million people in Europe and North America. Yes, actually, more people perished because of the so-called Spanish flu than from all the gunshots, cannon shots, shrapnel, death by drowning in the trenches, starvation in World War I. They killed more people than all the deaths on the battlefield in that horrible slaughter. 17 years after the SARS virus killed some 800 people in China and Canada and terrified the entire world, a new plague threatens the West, the Wuhan coronavirus. Officially named 2019-nCoV, because that's its scientific name, it's called the coronavirus, the new virus has so far infected over 800 people in China. The latest plague erupted in the central Chinese city of Wuhan, population 11 million, which is located on the Yangtze River and is an important hub for national communications and movement of people. Yeah, you've got every reason to be scared. Like SARS, the Wuhan virus is believed to have come from a live animal market that specializes in exotic animals from the Himalayas or China's remote mountain regions. And it might also be pointed out, exotic, yeah, but in many cases they're endangered species. Dogs are, serving exotic animals at dinner parties is a big status symbol in China. Sometimes they're even served while alive. Dog meat is a favorite in northern China. Now, it may also be noted editorially that China has a large increasing group of up-and-coming, relatively wealthy people that are middle class or better. Now, when we say large numbers, in a population of 1.4 billion, even if the large numbers are only a few millions or tens of millions, that's suddenly millions and millions more people prepared to pay for good money to be able to throw an exotic party and say, we're going to eat a couple of crocodiles here, live, yay! aren't I a big shot? SARS was believed to have come from civet cats. As a result, thousands of these felines were brutally killed. But it was later determined that the virus originated from bats. then spread to other captive animals. Bat soup is another Chinese delicacy. Bats, of course, also are major carriers of rabies. Oh, wonderful. Let's have some bat soup. So the bats are defecating on the civet cats. Civet cats get eaten not properly cooked, and the virus worms its way into the human population. Keeping large numbers of captive animals crammed together in cages with poor ventilation and no cleaning is an ideal vector for viral diseases. I mean, yeah, like, evidently. Each year, China consumes 730 million pigs. 50% of China's factory farm pigs have so far contracted lethal swine flu. Rising standards have boosted demand for pork. I have seen how China raises... This is Eric Margolis reporting. I've seen how China raises and transports pigs. It's a nightmare of brutality and inhuman behavior. No wonder so many of these intelligent, sensitive animals fall ill and die. Swine fever could be a payback for China's terrible cruelty to pigs. And it's not just pigs. Pigs in North America are treated almost as badly. A lady where I live was actually jailed and prosecuted for having given water to a truckload of thirsty, starving, terrified pigs on the way to the slaughterhouse. In North America, animals destined for slaughter are packed together and then dosed with heavy antibiotics to combat communicable diseases from overcrowding mistreatment. These same antibiotics then enter our food chain, causing our ever-growing viral resistance. When the SARS epidemic erupted in South China 17 years ago, the Chinese Communist Party tried to hush up the crisis, allowing infected people to travel to North America and Europe. You see, the fact is, you can't trust that government. I mean, maybe you can't trust any government, but particularly. This time, China did the right thing by jumping hard on the epidemic, shutting down all air, sea, and land communication with the greater Wuhan region and 14 smaller cities, right in the middle of the Chinese New Year celebration, when over 400 million people returned to their homes. The epidemic could not have hit at a worse time, and that's true. There's a lot of travel at New Year's, just like in North America, people often return home for Christmas or go on travel to come, you know, from one end of the country or the other to their home to celebrate. Well, it's similar for the Chinese New Year, so that there would be normally a lot of movement of people. We're talking of an area here of, the city of Wuhan alone is 11 million. The surrounding area is about another 8 million. So that's a lot of people who could be moving. Some Wuhan residents have already flown to other parts of Asia and North America. Simply checking incoming passenger air travelers for fever will not prevent the virus from spreading or identify passengers who have contracted and are developing the disease. That's the thing. If it's in the obviously active stages, maybe, but it takes a while to incubate. A better solution would be to quarantine all people arriving from central China and even via airlines coming from there until we better understand the so-called the virus. We stop so-called terrorists and Muslims from flying to our shores. Why not potentially infected people? Now, this, of course, is where it gets right down to, in my opinion, multiculturalism. Yes, there'll be a howl. Well, it's discrimination. Well, no, this virus is coming from your part of the world, as did many of the previous virulent pests. Until we get a handle on this, Margolis makes a perfectly good point. Travelers from that area should be banned. It might be a few days, or a few weeks, maybe even a couple of months. But China must also be pressed to cease its dangerous, inhumane trade in exotic wild animals and urge to treat all animals with humanity and care. China is a major cause of species loss. Aside from a few brave animal rights groups, there's very little consciousness of our animal neighbors in China, nor understanding that animals are sentient beings with emotions similar to those of humans. The Chinese are one of the most intelligent people on earth, yet when it comes to animals, all they see is walking food. as I've seen on my travels across China, this is Eric Margolis writing, has made huge strides in public sanitation and cleanliness, as well as planting trees. Now it's time to stop abusing animals, or the plagues will keep coming. Yeah, I think it's perfectly valid to insist that they change their culture, or at least suppress this aspect of it. Excellent opinion by Eric Margolis. Now, we are around some Holocaust thingy. I'm not sure. I think it's Holocaust Remembrance Day or something like that. My ultra-Zionist National Post is full of Holocaust articles. I might critique a couple of them tomorrow or the next day. This one is, it's not directly about the so-called Holocaust. It is illustrative of some of the problem with this this whole thing. Jewish groups warn about Nazi glorification. Okay. Slugged here. Eastern European nations extol fighting Soviets but whitewash Holocaust. Well, let me give you perhaps an insight, and then we'll see how that applies. Yes, the relatively newly freed, as in 30 years ago, countries of Eastern Europe, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, the Ukraine, etc., still have bitter memories of the people who oppressed them, killed millions of their people, in the case of the Ukraine, starved to death 8 to 10 million Ukrainian peasants in 1932-33 to break the resistance of the Ukrainian peasants and Ukrainian nationalism. Yeah, they've got bad memories about communism. And so they have good memories of those who fought against communism. But they're whitewashing the Holocaust. Well, no, let me put it this way. Whitewashing isn't quite the right word. It's not that important. I'll tell you why. Because it wasn't my tribe. Well, actually, in this case, it wasn't their tribe. And that's actually quite healthy. I must be most concerned about what happened to my people. I'll give you an example. In colonial times, in the 17th century, the Iroquois frequently raided other tribes in Ontario, Quebec, what's now New York State, etc., and genocided them. And they genocided the Hurons. They came up, there were a couple of crucial battles, and the Hurons were virtually wiped out. Okay, that's a genocide. It happened in Canada. Do we have a National Huron Genocide Day? Nope. Do we have a Huron Genocide Month? Nope. Do we have in almost every major city some Huron Genocide Memorial? Nope. do you have a Huron Genocide Museum in Washington, D.C.? Nope. You have a Huron Genocide Wall or Monument in Berlin? Nope. Well, why not? Well, at its most basic, we might acknowledge it was a bad thing, of course. Not pro-Iroquois or anti-Huron, but it just wasn't my people. That's the bottom line. And so, but by extension, why do the countries I've mentioned, Canada, the United States, Berlin, or Germany in the case of Berlin, major cities all across the Western world, and in various countries, are there commemorations for Holocaust Remembrance Week and day and month and so on? Well, it didn't happen to our people. It didn't happen here. It didn't happen in North America. And we didn't do it. Why? Well, it's the inordinate power of a certain group. Maybe if the Hurons controlled, or what's left of them, if there are any left, control much of the mass media, maybe we would be having them. But anyway, okay, what's the problem with Eastern Europe? Holocaust survivors gathered to commemorate the 70th anniversary of their rescue from Auschwitz death camp, a wave of glorification of Nazi collaborators and some of the perpetrators of the Holocaust is gaining momentum. Now there's an opening paragraph with a lot of iffy statements. Holocaust survivors are gathering to commemorate the 75th anniversary of their rescue from Auschwitz. How many people who survived, who were in Auschwitz, don't forget it was closed January 1945, that's 75 years ago, how many of them are gathering? Well, if you were 20 years old, you'd be 95 today. If you were 18, in 45, you'd be 93. How many are there? Real survivors. Countries throughout Eastern Europe are now celebrating as national heroes their citizens who collaborated with Adolf Hitler's Third Reich and participated in the roundup of murder of Jews. Well, there's another big smear. They're celebrating nationalists who fought the communists. Now, these nations had not much of a choice in beginning in 1941 with the thrust toward the east by Hitler's armies. Do you stay loyal to the communists who have oppressed you, or do you embrace these new people who are anti-communist and are promising to free your lands and return some degree of self-determination, as happened in the Baltic states and in Hungary and so on? Now, I'd say the choice for any nationalist was clear. You join the guys that have the best chance of booting out and driving out and freeing the communists and freeing your country, which means you cooperate with the armies of Germany and of National Socialism. Now, the Jews, of course, who dominate much of this discussion, say, "But what about us? They should have fought for us." Well, no, they were fighting for themselves. There's another thing. Now, Eric Margolis, who the columnist I've mentioned just before this, has written about this. A very delicate topic. It shouldn't be. It's a matter of history. Jews were a major force behind communism. Some people even say that essentially communism was Jewish. No, not all Jews are communists. Some Jews are even anti-communists. But in Eastern Europe, those who perpetrated communism, many of the torturers were Jews. Now, you might see why there might be a certain animosity. That often is not mentioned, because it provides a broader picture. Why? Why were people not very favorable to Jews in much of Eastern Europe? Well, Jews were seen to be a very important part of the communist system that had tortured, starved, and suppressed these people. They didn't have very good memories of Jews. And again, not all Jews, of course, were communists. But that helps spread sketch in a bit of the picture. In early January, torchlight parades were held in a number of cities in the Ukraine to honor Stefan Bandera, a Ukrainian nationalist, and it says national collaborator, or Nazi collaborator, whose organization, Holocaust Scholars, was involved in the killing of thousands of Jews and Poles. Ukraine's sponsoring of events to honor such leaders and other nationalist Nazi collaborators linked to the Holocaust prompted the official protests from the Israeli and Polish governments, and very much to their credit, the Ukrainian government just told them this is an internal matter for the Ukraine, and you buzz off. It's not your business. Good for them. Okay. Now, that's a mouthful about Nazi collaborators and rounding up Jews and so on. Again, a bit of perspective. The OAU, which was Stepan Bandera's organization, was a nationalist and patriotic organization that fought the communists. Now, a war is going on. How do you fight the communists other than by working with the main army that's fighting the communists, namely the German army? Does that make you a Nazi collaborator? Well, no, it makes you a person that doesn't have a lot of choice in the matter. If you want to free your country, you've got to cooperate with the major force that's fighting the communists. It's not a practical proposition to say, well, we don't want to recover to work with you, but we want to fight them. Well, that's just not the way it works in the real world. Now, were some Jews rounded up? Probably. Were they communists? That's a question that those who making all the noise right now don't answer. I mean, they may have been rounded up for a very good reason. But the mere fact that he fought with the Germans, in my opinion, doesn't prove a thing. In fact, it probably proves his good sense as a nationalist. In Lithuania, a school has been named for Jonas Noreika, a nationalist leader whose family acknowledges were involved in the killing of Jews. That may have been the case, but that's not the only thing he did. Dwight Eisenhower deliberately starved to death 1 million German soldiers, but he's still an honored American hero. I should say German soldiers who'd surrendered. In December, a Ukrainian diplomat who blamed Jews for the Second World War talked about punishing kikes and posed for photographs with a cake baked in the shape of Adolf Hitler's book Mein Kampf and was reinstated despite protests from Jewish groups. You mean the guy's entitled to an opinion? Gee, that's a lot healthier than here in much of the so-called free world in the West. So this man blamed the Jews for the Second World War. Well, there is some reason to argue that. I'm not going to give the reasons tonight. And it may be, it may not be the only factor. But there's no doubt that beginning in 1933, world Jewry invoked a boycott on Germany as soon as Adolf Hitler came to power. That their stated goal was to destroy Adolf Hitler and National Socialism. And their pressure had a fair deal to do with maneuvering Britain and France into war with Germany. And of course, once that started, all sorts of other countries clicked into place on one side or another, and we had another world war. it's a point of view. Parades have been held in Estonia, Latvia, and Ukraine in honor of individuals who fought in SS units. In September, Latvian Defense Minister Artis Pabriks praised the Latvian SS division, that's the 14th SS division, who fought for the National Socialists in the Second World War, calling them the pride of the Latvian people and state. Number of those Latvian SS members have been involved in Holocaust crimes, including one of its officers, Viktor Aras, whose organization participated in the murder of 26,000 Jews. Well, wait a second before we get to all that. The Latvian SS, the 14th Division, the Latvian SS Division, fought incredibly bravely and took immense casualties trying to stop the Russians from coming back in 44 and early 45. Yes, they fought with the German army. Well, what was the alternative? And you see, as a nationalistic or patriotic Latvian, I would honor these people. In fact, I've actually known several members of that division. And of course, they're now dead, including one old gentleman who could sport two Iron Crosses earned in battle. So yes, those were their choices. Oh, they were with the Nazis. I never use that word because it's a smear word. But they were with the Germans, with the National Socialists. Yeah, because as a nationalist, that was really their only choice. Life doesn't always give you, a wide variety of choices. Sometimes it does. Sometimes, so your choices are now not the greater of two goods, or this good versus that evil, but the lesser of two evils, or the greater of two goods, if you're lucky. Now, I won't go into the allegations against this gentleman, Viktor Zarosz, who was an officer. He participated in the killing. You mean, did he actually kill 26,000? And why? See, there were a lot of Jewish partisans. A partisan is fair game for being instantly executed in war. See, if you wear a uniform, you have certain protections and rights under the Geneva Conventions. If, though, you blend into the civilian population, you're Shmuel the baker by day, and a guy in a dark coat taking shots at German officers at night, the same safeguards cannot be invoked. And that's a matter of developing a little bit of perspective here. A researcher, Holocaust, it's only, of course, the Jewish sufferings, a man named Per Anders Rudling, said Eastern European nations such as Latvia, Ukraine, Lithuania are involved in efforts to rebuild their national identities and are rediscovering individuals from the 1940s to elevate to hero status. Such individuals fought against Russians for independence. Well, communists, let's be clear there. But some of these national leaders also joined forces with the Nazis and murdered Jews. Well, that was the only choice on the table to free your country. You had to ally with the major military power that had fought these people, had fought the communists. Yeah, it wasn't the Allies. The Allies were, that's right, we're in cahoots with the communists. Joseph Stalin, at one point in the rather simplistic American media, was hailed as Uncle Joe. Well, as if he's a kind of a benevolent figure with a bushy mustache. No, he was a psychotic, paranoid mass murderer. Murder on an industrial scale. Yeah, isn't that the crime that's often attributed to the National Socialists, isn't it? But he was our ally of Canada, the United States, France, we, the good guys, we were in bed actively with the communists. In fact, supporting the communists. In fact, Russia could probably not have mounted the counterattack it did without massive arms sales and deliveries from the West, particularly the United States. So, do we denounce our leaders as communist collaborators? Yeah, some of them really could have. War makes strange bedfellows. These Eastern European patriots made the only choice they could. And the paragraph ends rather mischievously with, they also murdered Jews. Well, yeah, they may have indeed. And of course I ask, but why? They just say, hey, you're a Jew, you'll be killed? That's rather simplistic, because lots of Jews did not die. What did happen is that in some cases, Jewish partisans were executed, and perhaps others suspected of being partisans. It's war. That doesn't make it good, that doesn't make it right. But in war, as it's often said, shit happens. That's one of the problems with war. People become very, very violent, obviously. And sometimes there's rough justice. There's the belief that a certain village harbored people that killed a German officer. I've been told by a friend from Slovenia that the communist guerrillas would sneak into a village, shoot a couple of Germans, and then skedaddle into the hills. Then the German army would come to the village and demand to know who did it. And sometimes the villagers were not able to know exactly who did it. And the Germans, in reprisal, would take away a number of people, sometimes execute them, or sometimes send them off for forced labor. It's not pretty, but it's war. I'm going to take my musical break now. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on lightresistanceradio.com. So, you know, we're talking about World War II. Going to play some German songs. No, they're not that kind of songs. These are kind of bar, more cheerful drinking songs.
Thank you. Thank you. Paul Crum. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. Show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless.